The 36-year-old Trans-Alaska Pipeline marches south from the North Slope across squishy tundra, mighty rivers, and high mountain passes on its way to Prince William Sound. The system that monitors that pipeline is a bit less romantic.
Well, here's a station control panel.
It's a beige cabinet.
And all these are now a bunch of Ethernet cables for communications between the various programmable logic controllers, or PLCs.
Mike Malvik is a senior processing engineer advisor for Alyeska Pipeline Services Company. He takes me on a tour of the pipeline's operations control center in Anchorage.
Upon pipeline startup, there was a computerized control system, but it was a lot more primitive in that it used mechanical relay switches and vacuum tubes.
Now, pipeline controllers sit in a quiet room filled with massive monitors. The screens show schematics that look sort of like 1980s video games. Symbols indicate which valves are open and the direction the oil is headed.
Following the blue line, the oil's going to tank number 5 today.
Controllers monitor pressure, temperature, and flow. They respond to alarms and communicate with workers in the field. It's extremely mellow during a normal day, as the controllers try to keep the oil flowing at a steady state. But Malvik explains that maintaining the steady state is harder when less oil is flowing through the system. With only about 550,000 barrels entering the pipeline per day, the oil gets colder much faster.
And if you get to the freeze point, then you can start making ice in the pipeline, coating critical valves, collecting in low spots of the pipe, and then when we run a cleaning pig, have that cleaning pig pick up that ice and bring it into a pump station and plug the pump station up.
A cleaning pig looks like an 8-foot-long shish kebab of mushrooms and quarters. It scrapes the inside of the pipeline and pushes wax and ice out of the system. The problem is, they only work if the oil is moving fast enough to push them along. In the next few years, it may not be. Less oil makes leaks harder to detect as well. So how low is too low?
We haven't firmly landed on that number because we're still studying it.
Part of the study includes a new pipeline model decked out with all of the same types of monitors and equipment as the real pipeline, just in miniature. It's being built at the University of Tulsa.
What we've designed the test loop at Tulsa to do is simulate as closely as we can, if I was a drop of oil going from pump one to Valdez, what temperature variations would I see? What terrain types would I see?
Starting this month, they'll run oil from the North Slope through the model. They want to test new ideas like dry flow. It's deceptively simple. Oil pumped from the ground naturally contains water. If you let it sit in large tanks for a few hours, the water drops out. Less water in the oil could solve problems like ice buildup and pipe corrosion. Louis Epstein is a petroleum engineer with the Wilderness Society and vice president of the Pipeline Safety Trust. She says studying the technical problem is the best solution to the low flow issue.
From my perspective as an engineer, the things they're looking at right now seem to make a lot of sense.
Epstein says she trusts that Alyeska, which operates the pipeline on behalf of its owners, has motivation to find a way to keep taps running for decades to come.
The major operators on the North Slope don't want to leave the crude in the ground. They've already done the exploration. They've set up the pipeline infrastructure. They want to see it go to market. So there's, from a commercial standpoint, from an economic standpoint, they're going to make sure that TAPS is viable over the long run.
From an environmental standpoint, she would rather the companies make use of the infrastructure and oil fields that are already there instead of developing places like Anwar. As Alyeska waits for the study results, they're dealing with the low flow problem by adding extra heat to the oil. They have restarted some pump stations where they cycle the oil through multiple times. The friction heats it up before it heads back down the line. Another possible solution is storing oil in tanks at pump station 1 and only running the pipeline part-time. But Malvik says starting it and stopping it in the winter has problems of its own.
We don't have all the answers now, but we're working on them, and we're working on them very thoroughly because we can't afford to be wrong. We have to get it right.
He's hoping the answers from Tulsa will help the pipeline run efficiently and safely far into the future. For APRN, I'm Ann Hillman.